Welcome to the Straight Talk Physio Podcast with your hosts, Dr. Andrew Junak and Dr. Craig Giambattista. On today's episode, we're going to talk about our unfiltered, raw, and uncut thoughts on the current state of healthcare. So we decided to do this podcast because we wanted to just share our feelings. Sometimes it's good to vent. It's good to get some different things out, you know, because you keep it all bottled in, you know, things come out in different ways. So we felt it'd be a good idea to jump on this podcast and, you know, talk a little bit more about kind of how we feel about the current state of healthcare and some of the things that definitely need change, and then also alert the public to what's going on and share some of our thoughts and feelings about some of the contemporary things that are happening within our society today. So Craig, do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, what you want to get started with, what your first topic of interest is?
Yeah, and interesting topics they are, in my opinion, because like you said earlier, it's like always interesting. I think this is going to be an interesting podcast because it's like, we're going to talk about like what's going on in like the background, you know, because like for all the patients listening in there, when you go to see your healthcare providers, like it's first and foremost, it's our job to make you better, you know, like, but just like any other job out there, there's barriers and there's things that bug us and things that really don't come out in a treatment session. Because I mean, that's not appropriate. That's not what we're there for. So it's going to be, I think, pretty interesting to talk about some of the stuff that's swirling around in our heads, but maybe we might not say, you know, to the patients. And just to start us off here, and I think it's the number one thing, and it's a poorly understood thing, but it's something that affects us all, PT especially. And my biggest gripe, and I have this conversation with patients all the time, is like the insurance model. Like number one, people don't understand it. And number two, in my opinion, it doesn't really do a good job of, you know, being preventative or keeping people outside of it. Like the healthcare system is almost, it's a business first and foremost. And in some cases, it almost feels like the goal is to keep you in versus, you know, to keep you out. Is that anything that you kind of think of? Or I guess we'll just start by like, you know, what's your thought on like the whole insurance thing or like just healthcare in general, like where it's at? I know you chose to step outside of that, and we'll get to that. So I think it's super important. But yeah, just what do you think?
You know, for me, there's a little bit of an origin story there. And usually I tell this in like workshops and when I do different things, I'll talk about like my first experience, like my very first job out of school and how I was working with a bunch of people who weren't necessarily committed to getting better at what they do. So basically it was a group of people, a lot of different colleagues. You know, I came out of school, I was super excited. I ran for, you know, positions within our student government. I tried to run for president of our national association as a student. I was like student of the year. Like, I mean, I did all the things in school. So I came out like red hot, super passionate, like ready to like hit the ground running. And some of the people that I was working with were like not interested in getting better at what they did. Like we have to do continuing education, right? Every couple of years we have so many credits that are due. I can't even tell you how many credits are due. I'm sure you can echo the same thing because we take a lot of the same coursework. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many credits we need. I just know I'm always way above it because I take lots of continuing education courses. And the people that I was working with were not interested in getting better at what they did. And I think the number one issue in healthcare right now is a lack of accountability. Currently, clinicians are not held to the standard of getting people better. There are certain types of injuries that you should get better every single time. There are other injuries that, you know what, if you don't have the skills, you probably won't get them better. And then there are other injuries where, you know what, that person just needs surgery. But we should be able to catch majority of those patients that don't need surgery, get them better. The problem is in our current healthcare system, there is no accountability for it. You actually don't get paid as a therapist based on how good you treat or how many patients you get better. Craig, do you want to break down how the billing works in our profession? Because I know you're currently in the insurance model. I'm a little bit removed. I don't know if things have changed in the last few years, but you know, how does the billing work?
Yeah, well, I can tell you since you have gotten out, things have stayed exactly the same. But from like a, you know, a patient perspective, the simplest way I can, you know, put it is when you come to see a physical therapist, depending on your insurance, we bill in something called a unit, and that is like a time-based thing. So depending on the amount of time you are being seen for physical therapy, that equates to a certain amount of units, you know. And there's different rules for different insurances, but just for pure example's sake, let's say 45 minutes, like your typical treatment session, let's equate that to 3 units. And each of those units can mean a certain thing. Like if you're doing exercise, there's a unit for exercise. If you're doing manual therapy, like we're doing something hands-on, there's a unit for that. If you're evaluated, there's a unit for that. So just know that there's specific units for specific things, and depending on how long you're in there, that dictates how much it costs. So as a, you know, insurance model clinician, after I see a patient, I type up my note, I input the billing. That billing is then submitted to the patient's insurance. And what will happen is, under my license and the facility that I work for, they're going to say, for this amount of units, we're charging the patient this many dollars. And then the insurance company will pay either 100% of that, they'll pay a certain percentage of that. And then if they don't pay for it, then the rest falls on the patient. So basically, it's kind of like a fee for service sort of model. So the service you're getting as a patient, you will be charged a fee depending on the length and time of that specific service. So the big thing you have to, you know, look out for is, or at least as a patient, what you might want to think of is, how much is it costing me to come to physical therapy based off, you know, how many days a week am I going? How long am I there? What is the therapist doing with me? And then how does that, you know, equate sort of to cost? And the things that I'm leaving out, and things get a little dicier here, some patients might have a copay, which basically just means, like, doesn't go to your deductible, doesn't really go towards the bill. It's just like you step in the door, you owe this, you know, amount of money. And that's like a whole thing in and of itself. And I think that, you know, patients really have no idea how that works. So the explanation I just gave is like as simple as it possibly can be. And I think one of the big problems is people don't know how that works. Like, people don't even know, like, the fee for service thing. They don't know how much stuff is costing. They just sort of come, the bill compiles at the end of the month, they get a bill, they have no idea what it's for. They just get it, they pay it, and they move on. And a lot of time there's frustration there because there's no, like, transparency for that. Like, if as a patient, you probably have no idea how much it's costing you to be in the room. You don't know how much we're billing out. You don't know how much your insurance is reimbursing. You just know at the end of the month, you're getting a bill. Yep. And I think that that's a huge problem that we'll touch on here in a second, is not only access to healthcare because of cost, but also the transparency of, you know, what is exactly, is it costing you? You know, like, the insurance-based model or insurance-based places do a really good job of making it very difficult to see exactly what you're paying for and exactly how much, you know, things are costing.
Right.
But from, like, a cost perspective on, like, the cash-based side, Drew, your side, like, how does it work for you? And then we'll kind of circle back and, like, kind of say, like, how do these two things relate? And, like, in our opinion, you know, which one works better?
You know, to be honest, from an insurance model, what I found when I was going through that frustrated me the most is that there was a lack of accountability. So, for example, I would work with a colleague, and the colleague would see a patient, and they'd come to me and they'd say, "Hey, Drew, I've been seeing this patient and I just feel like they're not getting any better." And I said, "Well, how long have you been seeing them?" And, you know, let's say they had knee pain. Well, they're on visit 19. The patient only was allowed 20 visits by their insurance. So I'm saying, what in the world have you done with this patient for 19 visits? If that patient isn't getting better, they didn't have surgery. This was a non-surgical case. If this patient isn't getting better within, you know, 4 to 5 visits, and there's zero change, you need to be asking the question of, do I need to send them to someone else? Do I need to get them some additional help? What's next? Because that patient is going to end up footing that bill. That patient is paying that money. If they haven't met their deductible, they're going to get billed, for example, at some of the big hospitals in the area, $350 to $325 a visit if you don't have a copay. So you're going to be paying that until you meet your deductible. So people are going to get hammered with these bills. But at the end of the day, if that therapist was incompetent or didn't know how to treat that specific condition, they're not held accountable. So because there's no accountability there, that was one of the biggest things that bothered me, was that, you know, you see a lot of overbilling and overutilization of services. And some of it is lack of education or expertise by the therapist. And then the other part of it is because the more times you see a patient in the insurance model, the more money you make for the hospital. So if you get people better faster, So Craig, you know, let's do the math here. Craig's an outstanding therapist. Craig probably gets people better. I mean, what would you say your average length of visit that you get someone better in?
It all depends on the condition, but on average for just your basic stuff, like anywhere from like 6 to 10 visits, you know, okay. I would say. And by then it's like, we should have a good handle of like, is this fixable or is this not, you know, yeah. I would say that's probably my average. Again, very nuanced, but if I had to give a number, that would be it.
So 6 to 10 visits. If Dr. G over here decided to go somewhere in an insurance-based model to some other clinic and work there, and he might be the best therapist in the building, and he might get all of his patients better in 6 to 10 visits, but a different therapist is getting patients better in 15 visits. Well, the clinic director might be having a talk with Craig, Dr. G over here, and saying, hey man, you're getting people better really fast. We need you to see more patients, or we need you to see more visits. You need to see people more times. And believe it or not, this happens every day in insurance-based models. When people are getting better too fast, the hospitals and the clinics actually lose money. So that's kind of where I flip the script with the cash-based model. And I give you my prediction. It's going to take me 5 visits. It's going to take me 8 visits to fix this problem. It's going to take me 13 visits, whatever it is. And then the onus is on me to deliver that. And if I can't deliver that, then the onus is on me to get you to the right professional. I don't just let you fall into the system again. Like, I take ownership of your care. And that's the difference is, you know, for me, I'm being transparent, not only with the cost, but also with the outcome that you're supposed to get with the services that I'm providing. Whereas from an insurance model, people can just see you and see you and see you and see you and see you, and then just wait for you to fall out of the system. And there's no accountability in helping you get the outcome that you're looking for. Would you say that's pretty accurate of what you've seen?
Yeah, I would say one of my huge things, and you kind of already touched on it there, is the system itself is, like I said, it's a business and it's designed to make money, because it's like, if you don't generate enough revenue to, you know, offset your costs, then you can't stay open. So I do understand that, you know, there is a point to where like a business does need to generate enough revenue to stay open and cover their costs. But when, you know, you're talking about these like, you know, crazy amount profits, then like, of course the system is now designed to like squeeze from each employee the max amount possible. Like you said before, like if you don't see people for very long or for a very short period of time, then you have to generate more revenue somehow. And that means you have to see more patients, or see patients for 30 minutes instead of 45 minutes, or you know, anything which is designed to make the numbers for that specific, you know, business good. But I think it kind of pushes patient care just a little bit to the side. Yeah. And I think it puts more of an emphasis on the business end than the patient end. And I think a huge problem with that is like, healthcare has become like pretty, you know, everyone is their own special individual and case. And I think that we've gotten to a point where it's become very unindividualized.
Yeah.
Tough time spitting that one out. I think, you know, we're so data driven right now. Everything is so data driven. So it's kind of like, let's say if we're talking about just general shoulder pain, and I've done a million hours of research on shoulder pain, and it says for this kind of shoulder pain, I should get you, you know, you should see success with physical therapy in 8 visits, and 8 visits comes up and you're not better. So I got to get rid of you, or I got to do this or do that, you know? And I think that, you know, it kind of takes the patient out of healthcare, and now it just puts it into like, you're just some algorithm that you fit into, and you should do these things. And if it doesn't work, you know, too bad, on to the next thing. I think we lose that kind of individual process there, kind of that we're just sort of sacrificing it for the, we have to keep the lights on mentality. And I think that like finding that balance is super hard, you know, like people dedicate a lot of time into doing that. And I think the main barrier for that happening is like, healthcare is such this strange environment, because like, you're, as the patient, you come into the hospital, but the payer and everyone working at the hospital is dictated by some third party insurance company that you never ever see.
You never see.
It's not like you don't go to hospital, pay for service, you know, and then you're done. You know, it's like you just kind of we are at the mercy of billing something out, and then a third party saying, well, we'll pay you a percentage of that. And I think it like causes this weird loop to say like, well, if you're going to keep shortchanging us, then we're going to need to see more people, or we're going to need to start charging more. Yep. And then the insurance end says, well, we're going to just reimburse less because now you're billing us more. And then you just caught in this like endless cycle And the only loser, I think, is the patient.
The patient, the whole way, 100%. 100%.
So I think that from like a cash-based standpoint, Drew, like, do you feel like you're able to provide more like individual care, or coming from like the insurance-based model to now the non-insurance-based model, like, who would you like, does this work? Should everybody be like going to cash pay? Like, who is this perfect for? You know, who does the insurance model work for some people? Does the cash work for some people, or should everybody jump ship and go, you know, cash only? I guess, like, where are your thoughts on that? Cause I have my own feelings there.
Yeah, I think there's a certain person who benefits from the cash model. I mean, and there's also a certain person who benefits from the insurance model. I think from the cash model, it's somebody who's looking for a specific type of care, values one-on-one care. You know, some of the things that I can offer that you'll never get at a hospital or anything like that, or any other outpatient facility, is 24/7 access to me. You know, I restrict the number of patients that I have. So I don't have a caseload of 250 patients all at the same time that I'm constantly managing. I can keep my caseload small, and then I can give you the individual attention that you need. You get 1 hour unfiltered time with your doctor, the time that you need to have your specific condition analyzed, taken care of. If I do need to communicate with another provider, I have the time to do so. Just today, I had to communicate with another provider. I jumped on a phone, gave them a call, wrote them a note, and then called the patient right after, because I now have time to do that and dedicate to that. So you get a different level of care. And what I usually tell people is, you know, you have different levels of service in every single profession and every single product. You know, every product has a light version, you know, an average version, and then a super high quality version. And so, you know, from a cash-based perspective, typically, you know, my practice is very niche toward active adults and athletes who want to get back to doing something they love. Now, if you're somebody who is interested in opiates, or somebody who's interested in getting an injection, like, I can't help you with that. If you're someone who wants a quick fix, I'm not the right solution for you. You know, you might be best served to start with the insurance model and see where that goes. You know, other people who tend to benefit from the insurance model are people who are very sedentary. You know, for some people, they just don't have an active lifestyle, and their pain is because they don't move. Well, getting the bare minimum that you get from an insurance-based model might be a great start for you, to getting you one step or two steps closer to getting out of pain. It might not completely get you there, but it's better than nothing. So, you know, I think there's a time and place for all these different models. You just have to at some point decide, like, you know, do you want a flip phone, or do you want an iPhone? Like, what's the difference? Like, what's right for you? And then some people, they buy the flip phone and they say, man, boy, I sure wish I had the ability to, you know, download this app or play this game or do this, you know. And then people switch and say, man, I tried the flip phone, wasn't for me, I need to go iPhone. And so, you know, there's different levels, different tiers of service. And, you know, I think there is definitely a place for people who have cash pay or who want to go the cash pay route, because it is more niche down. You're going to get a higher level of customer service. And then there's also the place for insurance, where you get a lower tier of service. Kind of overall, obviously, you have some very good therapists within that model. Again, you're fantastic, but you're in that model. And so it's like, when a patient comes in, they don't know if they're going to get you. They don't know if they're going to get somebody who's fresh out of school. They don't know if they're going to get somebody who doesn't even want to be a physical therapist anymore. Like, you just don't know what you're going to get. So the way I look at it is, there's different tiers. And at some point, you have to take a look in the mirror and say, hey, where do I need to start, or where do I belong? And then from there, take that jump.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people don't know the cash option is even there. Just to speak a little more on who is right for what, like, I, you know, and first and foremost, the one thing I want to make perfectly clear is there are some fantastic elite level therapists working in the insurance-based model.
Amazing.
Like, not bashing on them at all. I think my big complaint with it is just, it's limiting. That's all. Like, it's just limiting. There's a certain box that you're set in, and it's really tough to get out of it. And I think that things are in control of you when they really shouldn't be, which we are advanced providers, you know, we're advanced providers. And I think that the insurance companies don't recognize that. And it can be frustrating. That's like the biggest thing. But just kind of moving on, I think from a pure cost perspective, if you're in the box of, qualifying for like Medicaid or, very low cost services, the insurance model might not be a bad thing because, yep. you know, cash based is in fact cash based. Like it is expensive, but like anything else, like Andrew said, if you want a really niche, high quality, very individualized product, or you have a very specific goal in mind, then I think the cash based option as well. But I think from a cost perspective, then the insurance based model might be the right choice for you. Or if you have really great insurance, like let's say you have like your deductible is like super low and your out of pocket maximum is, super low and there you're not limited on the amount of visits you get. You don't have a really high copay, like the insurance model might be perfect for you, especially if you find someone in a good insurance based setting, around there. I think that we're definitely not saying cash based is the only way to go.
Right.
But I think that those people in the middle would benefit knowing that there's that second option out there. And I think that people, at least people that I speak to, really don't know their insurance benefits. And I think that it's made complicated almost for a reason sometimes. Like a lot of people out there, like I challenge all the listeners you have right now, like when it comes to like physical therapy or even primary care doctor, emergency room, like what's your deductible? Like what's your out-of-pocket maximum? What's your premium? Like how much are you paying each month for it? Like how much does your insurance cover if something, were to happen? And then if you kind of nail that down and say like, well, I've got this $2,000 deductible and, my insurance is paying 80% of my physical therapy and I got this $20 copay. So it turns out that every time you're there, you're paying, $150. Like why not, instead of that coming, right out from you, why not give that to someone in a niche practice that like can afford to give you a lot of time or, really button down on your issues and really help you through this specific thing. Because I think people have a really hard time like giving the money up front, like no one wants to calculate like how much it's going to cost monthly because they're taking it. It's out of their check, out of sight, out of mind, or it's just $20 when I go to PT and I'll get the bill at the end of the month. I think people have trouble kind of piecing that out and just kind of taking back and looking at the big picture. And the other thing is probably the most frustrating thing for me, like, and I can get on a huge soapbox here, is I think people truly underestimate the value of like physical therapy services. And I think that's like a big education problem from the top down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it, I have so many people come in and be like, oh, well, it's just exercise. And then after we work together for a couple of visits, they're kind of like, whoa, this is definitely not exercise. Like we're doing like, you're really, or there have been countless times where someone has told me like, this is the most in-depth exam I've got since I've had this problem going on, or I thought we were just going to be doing exercises, but we're doing all these hands-on treatments, or like you're really breaking down what I'm doing, and it's not a personal trainer,
Yeah.
And I think that there is just a lack of education from a patient standpoint to say like, why is this, physical therapy so expensive? And I think it's because people really don't know what we do. And I think providers in our healthcare system also don't know what we do. Like I had an instance just today actually at work. So part of my work duties is like if somebody just had surgery and they need like crutches to go home, but they don't know how to use them, then I go down there and I just kind of make sure the crutches fit right and teach them how to use them and be safe with them, et cetera, whatever. So I'm down there doing my crutch training, and another one of the employees on the nursing staff, they kind of came over and was like, oh, hey, you're PT, right? Yeah, absolutely. What's going on? And they were like, how long have you been doing this? And I was like, a little over 4 years. Why? What's up? And they go, you know what? I've been to PT plenty of times and it just didn't seem to help. And I was like, okay, well, where did you go? And, I'm not going to mention names or anything like that, but they went to this chain physical therapy location to where there was one therapist and an aide working with, 2 to 4 patients at the time. They showed up, walked in, they got their sheet of exercises, they did their exercises, they turned around and they left. And like in their mind, that's physical therapy. And it's like, personally makes my head want to explode.
Yeah.
But, like, first off, it's our fault for, as physical therapists, for allowing it to happen. And number two, like this specific person had no education. They didn't even know that that was bad. That was just routine for them, And now in their mind, like, why in the world would I pay $150 a visit for that? I'll get a personal trainer. That doesn't make sense to me. And I think that the longer I do this, the more and more I realize that that's what people think like, you know, quote, good physical therapy is. And that's like a pretty frustrating thing for someone that wants to, you know, get like really good patient outcomes. And that's, again, not a knock on the people that work there, because they're trying to do their best with the, you know, with the tools that they're given. And I'm sure that all the employees in that place want the best for the patient, absolutely. But if you show up to work every day and your manager's saying you got to see 3 patients every hour, like, that's tough. And that's, you know, I think, you know, as a community, we all got to kind of stand up and realize that's not the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that separates kind of like a general PT from a very skilled PT is the diagnostic component. And I think that's where, you know, especially from my perspective, or what I see in my practice, is that's what turns people's heads. Is they come in, they say, oh, I have shoulder pain. I don't know what's wrong. I just want to get back to doing X, Y, and Z. But being able to take them through that assessment process, that evaluation process, and at the very end, come to a conclusion and say, here's where your problem is. This is what we're looking at. If we do X, Y, and Z, this is the yellow brick road to get you to pain free. You know, here's the plan. And that's something that a lot of patients don't get. They go to that first assessment, they push on a couple spots, and then they say, yeah, you have shoulder pain. And they give them very generic things to do, but they're not attacking the problem. You have to go at the specific problem. You have to figure out what's driving it, what's causing it. And then you have to tailor your care towards that. And it sounds super simple. It sounds super simple, but you wouldn't believe how often it doesn't happen in our healthcare system. I think part of that is some of it may be lack of training. And then I think the other part of it is, like you said, a lot of therapists are overworked. They're seeing 3 patients at a time, some 4 patients at a time in some of these insurance-based settings, and they're getting bogged down. You can't give good care when you're splitting yourself 3 ways and you're doing it for 8 to 10 hours at a time. You just can't. It's just not sustainable, and it's not good for the patient. It's not good for the provider. And right now we have a huge problem in our profession with burnout. People don't realize that. I only worked for 2 years within the insurance model before I was like feeling those signs of burnout. And that's what actually in part caused me to start my own practice. Was I was burned out. I was sick and tired of the care that I felt I could give better care than I was allowed to give through the insurance model. And so I said, well, how can I make this on my own? How can I scale this? How can I grow this to provide the best care that I can in the entire Columbus area? You know, my goal is to serve Columbus in a way that nobody else can serve Columbus, Ohio. And so that was my goal, my driving force behind all this, and to give myself a better renewed sense of purpose, because I was losing it with the system that I was kind of stuck in.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of things. Like, I think that's something that people don't understand. You know, I think that even when I talk to like friends or family members, and I'm like, hey, I got a buddy that charges only cash for medical services, for physical therapy. And everyone's like, people pay for that? You know? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, they absolutely do. And I think it's important to know that, you know, you can get good, effective, cost-effective healthcare outside of the system. Yeah. And I could see that being more, you know, of a push in the future, because I think preventative medicine is like a super important thing. But again, it's not like highly reimbursed or highly recognized. So it's not something people, you know, talk about a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that, kind of just circling back to my point earlier, a lot of musculoskeletal conditions can improve. And notice I said improve, not like be cured, with adopting a healthy lifestyle and like learning to be active and learning to take care of yourself and just learning some basic exercise. And I think that saying it out loud seems like a super simple thing. Like, oh, I'm just going to eat my vegetables and walk more, you know? But it's a little bit more complex than that. You know, like, we have doctorates for a reason. You know, we're the ones that are experts in that area. But from a business standpoint, it's not really expensive to do that.
No.
And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be expensive. It should be really cost effective. But if I was if I was a businessman and I had a store and I was selling, you know, my really expensive items, I would put them right at the front door, you know, like my surgeries or all my procedures, you know, whereas like the not so immediate effect stuff or the preventative stuff, that would probably be on the back shelf because it's not like a massive revenue generator, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of unfortunate because I think that that stuff is really helpful and, like I said, cost effective to patients, but not the biggest, you know, moneymaker as far as like the, you know, the numbers are concerned. So it's like this constant in my mind, like this push and pull of like the business end of healthcare and the provider end of healthcare. I'm obviously very biased because I'm on the provider end of just kind of like who has more pull and which way are we currently being pulled.
Oh, that's such a good point. Like, and if you're listening right now, I want you guys to sit back and ask yourself, like, if you've had an orthopedic problem, think about your journey. Who was the first person you likely saw? So if you've seen me in the past, it doesn't count. Okay. Think of something else. Because usually once I start working with people, they just come to me for all their orthopedic problems. I'm their first provider at that point. Mm-hmm. But think about prior to me, if you were a past patient, if you're not someone who's ever been a patient or you're on the fence, put yourself in your shoes in that situation. So you called your primary care, or you went to an urgent care, and they said, ooh, we don't know what's going on with you. Let's get an x-ray, right? You go, you get an x-ray of the problem. X-ray comes back negative, most likely, unless you had a fall or there was some sort of accident. What's your next stop? Usually some sort of medication. And then your next move is to an orthopedic surgeon. And the question is, why is the next move an orthopedic surgeon, right? For a muscle, tendon, ligament, bone problem that is non-surgical. So you go see the orthopedic surgeon, and then what's likely to happen? Well, they can only help you one of three different ways. They can give you medication, they can give you an injection, or they can do surgery, which all three of them end up in the long run costing more than physical therapy.
Exactly. And my
right?
biggest pet peeve, my
even,
biggest
even
pet
cash
peeve.
Pay physical therapy, even cash pay physical therapy, they all of them cost more. You get an injection, you're looking at $2,000. Like at the end of the day, like that's our current system right now. We give you the high ticket cost items first. If you don't take them, well, I guess we'll send you to physical therapy when we have better outcomes than all three of those things in the long run. We are the long-term solution for the problem. Those are all short-term solutions for what the patient is experiencing. Surgery can be a long-term solution, but that's like in the 1%. It's such a small percentage of people who are true surgical candidates. And usually the people who can identify those are not your primary care. So
yeah, and I think one of my biggest pet peeves of that you know, that linear like thing you just described is like by the time they get to us, physical therapy, normally the narrative is, let's try physical therapy. If it doesn't work, come back, get an MRI, and we consider surgery. Like,
yep.
It's like the worst mess. I mean, you have essentially
the worst message ever.
Yeah. At that point, you've essentially set someone up for failure. You know, like the if you have pain of any kind, and the next thing you hear is, give this a shot and we'll see if it helps. But if not, you know, probably gonna have to do surgery. Like, why are you telling people this? Like, the message should be like, let's try and I'll send you to a physical therapist first. Typically people do really well that, you know, see a physical therapist and, you know, commit to doing some exercise, and then we'll reevaluate after that. And just know that, you know, it's rare, but as an orthopedic surgeon, surgery is always there, you know? And I think that we do such a bad job of like telling people about prognosis that it's like sickening, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, are there times, like, we're not going to fix everybody. I'm not going to sit here and say that. Like, I was having a conversation with my coworker the other day, and it was, we got on the topic. We were like, how many people do you think you get better? You know, like from coming in with pain to absolutely no pain at all, zero pain. Like, where do you think you're at? And keep in mind, everybody listening, I see everything in the insurance-based model. So I see people that, you know, just pulled a hamstring running 2 weeks ago, but I also see people that have had back pain since they were 20 and they're now 65 years old.
And so, gunshot wounds.
And with gunshot wounds and, you know, whatever, you know, like a million things. Like, so you can understand that there's like a little variety. And I would say I use the rule of threes, 33% pain-free, 33% made a meaningful change for the positive. And patients can say, yes, I am better today than the day I first came in. And then there might be 33% where it's like, didn't work. you know, and that's through the whole gamut of things. Now, if you're in, you know, Drew, your, you know, line of work, you're seeing active, involved, you know, like you're seeing, you know, people that are, you know, coming ready to get better. So I'm sure that your rate of success is much, much higher than mine. But I would say 2/3 out of the time, like having a pretty good result from movement and exercise based stuff is
that's really good.
Considering the whole spectrum of diagnoses and pathology, we see that that's like, I think enough to make you want to say like, maybe this should be our first stop.
Yep. Absolutely. Like if you can catch 66% of the people, then you're doing a damn good job. You know, from my perspective, obviously the people I see when I ask them their medical history, they tell me none. You know, what medications you take? None. And then they'll list off like all their vitamins and supplements. So it's like, you know, most of the people I'm seeing live a active, healthy lifestyle already. So the way that they heal is a lot faster. So typically I would say that I'm patching people up. Like I'm in the probably 80 to 85, 90% range. So it's a lot higher, but I get a ton more help from the patient versus someone who hasn't gotten off their couch in, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. But that brings me to the next topic, though. You know, I don't want to make this whole this podcast about COVID or anything like that, but I definitely want to touch on this because I think there's been a huge failure by our health system, our healthcare system as a whole, through this pandemic. You know, I look at two different things. Okay, when you think of sports, there's two sides to the ball. Let's say we're talking about football. You know, you have offense and you have defense. If you have a really bad defense, you're probably going to lose the game. If you have a really bad offense, you're probably going to lose the game. You need this nice balance of both. And when it comes to COVID, you know, I view like social distancing. That's defense, right? Wearing a mask, that's defense. You know, but we're not talking about offense at all. And that's something that like, it burns me up inside. What should our offense be? A healthy diet, you know? Eating right, exercise, building your cardiovascular system. So if you were to come down with a virus, you have a better chance of fighting it off because you're not overweight or obese or, you know, struggling with, you know, other types of conditions. Preventing chronic illness should be number one right now, right? Because if we look at some of the stats and some of the data, people who have other types of illnesses are more susceptible to having complications from COVID and potentially dying from COVID. So why don't we focus on preventing chronic disease as a society rather than basically saying, hey, let's just socially distance. Let's just wear a mask. Like, I think we need to be playing offense too. We spend so much time on the defensive end, which is great. We definitely need that. We need to play defense right now, but at some point you need to play offense too. And as a society, we are one of the leaders in obesity. We are definitely the leader in childhood obesity, probably globally at this point. Like, we need to be playing offense. This needs to be talked about. There needs to be something more said about this. We can't keep going on and just talking about masks and social distancing. We need to improve our cardiovascular health. We need to get our diets right. As a nation, we need to do a better job of exercise, staying fit, staying healthy, not being sedentary. You know, we switched to a lot of people are working from home. Like, there needs to be programs provided by a lot of these corporations or something. Something needs to be done to get these people up and moving instead of working virtually from home. Because I'm actually seeing a lot of injuries from people sitting at a desk all day and basically saying, hey, I'm working from my kitchen table and I have terrible neck pain or terrible back pain. They don't have an ergonomic desk setup, but they're stuck at a desk doing Zoom calls all day. So these are some of the things that I'm seeing right now. And it's great. Like, absolutely. I'm 100% advocate for social distancing, wearing a mask out in public, especially when you're in groups of people. We have tons of evidence to support that. That is hands down what we should be doing. But I also think we need to be playing offense too. And we need to be focusing on some of these other important things and preventing chronic illness, because chronic illness right now is what's increasing the susceptibility to the virus. And then also creating increased danger for the people who do get the virus. And, you know, the fear of overwhelming the healthcare system becomes a little bit more real when, you know, majority of our society does have a lot of these other types of illnesses. So I don't know if there's anything you can add to that, but that's just been something that has been on my mind. I don't talk a lot on social media. You know, I use our podcast as a way to, you know, throw some of my thoughts out there, but man, has that been eating me up? And I've been wanting to say that for a while.
Oh, you got to let it out. That's the straight talk physio way. That's why we do it. And I think you bring up one of the things that I'll touch on that you brought up, which is like one of my biggest things. So when I talk to patients, like one of my number one things is just being proactive and like being accountable for your healthcare. And it's like, I don't mean to be derogatory when I say this, but it's almost like being healthy isn't a right, you know, like you don't just get to be healthy, you know, like you have to be an active participant in that. Like some people are really lucky. They're just going to live till they're 90 and eat whatever they want and it's all good and never have a pain in their life, you know, and there's going to be people that are really unlucky and they can do everything right. They can exercise and have a good diet, but they end up with, you know, a chronic disease of some sort. But I would say the average person, you know, just kind of expects like to go through their daily stuff. And if they exercise, great. And if not, great. If they watch their diet, okay. You know, but they're really not into it because it's tough or it's hard or they don't have time and all this, you know, all this other stuff. And I think going right along the lines with the COVID stuff is you just kind of, things fall apart at some point, and then it comes as like this big surprise. And now there's like this immediate need to get better, like right off the bat, you know, but you've kind of put yourself, you know, in this position to where you've kind of set yourself up for failure, you know, and I'm not advocating that everyone becomes like a gym rat or now is like a health nut or anything like that. But I think that like being your own advocate and start, you know, making a commitment to like looking into some healthy choices can provide like huge benefit down the long run, but it's not like a sexy solution. You know, it's not like, it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen quick. Or, you know, if you work out for a month, like you're not going to have a six pack and be like all jacked, you know, but is it going to reduce your chance for chronic disease or having knee pain when you're in your 60s? Like, heck yeah, it is, you know? Yeah,
absolutely.
But I think that, like, again, the healthcare system, the people that, you know, us, the people that are looking out for the patients or the people that have no knowledge of this stuff do a really crappy job of bringing that up, you know? And I think that goes along with, like, health and wellness and prevention programs. And it's something that, you know, I would love to see more in the future. But I think that, like, that stuff can't happen unless we do a better job of talking about this being an active person in your own healthcare. And, you know, that's not to say it's for everybody. Like, it's like, trying to think. So my brother smoked for a while.
Okay.
And he knew that smoking was bad and he just made the conscious choice to do it. Like knowing all the risks. So it's like, it becomes like a strange conversation, right? You know, like even armed with all this knowledge, if people don't want to do it, they certainly don't have to, you know, right. And the healthcare exists to kind of help out in the end. But I think that if the education isn't even there, then there's no, I know, and I'm just not going to do it anyways kind of deal. So I think that's one of my big gripes with healthcare is there's just that just lack of like basic knowledge. And that's kind of, you know, in my opinion, that's not very good.
Yeah. I think, you know, the way I always look at everything in life, and again, this is the business owner in me. I don't know what it is, but you know, today's the day to make a change. Why wait till tomorrow? Like if you're going to make a change, you can start today. You can start right now. You know, we have so much access to information at this day and age. Like if you want to know something, you Google it. You can find out right away. You know, you have access to me and Craig as providers. You know, we drop our email here at the end of every single podcast. We give you guys unfettered access to us. You can, if you're a past patient, you know how to text me, you know how to reach me. If you have questions, ask, like seek out the answers, because, you know, you do need to make a change right now. We're living in a really strange time with a pandemic. Like I never thought that I'd, you know, we learned about all these other types of issues, you know, as we were growing up, like smallpox and all these other things that we typically get like, you know, vaccines for nowadays. And then never in a million years did I think I'd be living through a pandemic. But, you know, we're here to serve as resources and we're here to help you guys out in any way that we possibly can so that you can not only play defense, but play offense in this time during the pandemic. But with that being said, Craig, do you want to wrap this up? Talk about some key points that we touched on. And then from there, we'll just kind of wrap up this version of our unfiltered, raw, and uncut podcast.
The uncut podcast. For this one, I just have one key point because I think it's so important that there's only going to be one. So if you listen to nothing else, this is the number one thing.
Here it is. Buckle up.
Buckle up. Put your seatbelts on. Hang on. Number one key point. And that's be your own advocate for health. Don't get gobbled up by the system. Know what your options are. Know what your insurance is. Know what you're getting charged. Ask to see your bills. See what is the healthcare system doing for you. And if you feel like it's fulfilling your needs, then great. But if it's not, then you need to get out of there and kind of work on your own time to find these people like Andrew or other cash-based clinicians or people in those niche areas that are willing to go that like extra step for you. Just always know you have a second option and look into it. Because it might not seem like everyone's so used to having healthcare. Like, I have healthcare, you just have healthcare and you just use it. You know, like that's been jammed down our throats for so long. Just know that there's other people out there that are not huge fans of the system and feel like that they can provide a much better service and they could do it at a great cost because they're a small operation. You know, they don't have to jump through all the hoops or go through all the red tape. They can do the things that they feel is absolutely best for the patient with all this, without all this bureaucracy and other garbage floating around. So all the listeners out there, be an advocate for yourself and just be careful not to let the system sort of suck you in.
Play offense, not just defense, baby. Let's go.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
Thank you for tuning into the Straight Talk Physio podcast. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean the world to us if you subscribe to this podcast and the Peak Physiotherapy and Performance YouTube channel. For more information about us, check us out on Facebook at Peak Physiotherapy Performance and on Instagram at P3 Physiotherapy. For more information about Craig, you can follow him at DrCraigG_PT on Twitter and Instagram. If you have any topic suggestions, comments, or questions, then feel free to email us at thestraighttalkphysiopodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for watching and hope you have an awesome day.